dress. We have a party tonight.
Hello from Recovery Internet Radio, broadcast direct from beautiful Bull Valley, Illinois. I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor.
Oh, welcome to our newest sponsor, Rose Painting and Drywall. Very nice, adding color to Chicagoland since 1965. Very good man.
Tonight's show, pain-free and drug-free, with your host, Rick Atwater.
Thanks for joining us tonight, where we are every Sunday night at 8 o'clock. Tonight our show is pain-free, drug-free. We're featuring Mr. Jim Kearns, and Mr. Drughead was going to be with us here tonight, but he didn't make it, which is entirely unusual. So we're going to just go with the flow on that. I want to thank Chris Atwater here, our engineer slash sidekick. You don't have your hat on tonight, but I got mine, so that's what matters. And shout out to Brendan O, who provides the music for our introduction. And also just a nod to a friend of ours that we recently lost, a young man named John. So if you'd think about John and his family, we'd appreciate that. Our musical guests tonight are Lamont and Athena, and they'll be playing for us at halftime, and they'll play us out. So, a couple of things. Remember that you can call in any time with questions or an opinion, I suppose, if you have one of those. And you can call us at 323-792-2977. That's the same number that we've had every week, so I guess it's not changing. We'll be sending a tweet out every week with a question or a statement that relates to this week's show or the show of the week. So follow us on Twitter at Rick Atwater, or like us on my Facebook page, or follow us on blogtalkradio.com, Straight Stuff on Addictions. We're also going to have a website up pretty soon called recoveryinternetradio.com. Give us a week or so on that. We also do a segment called Peeps on the Street, where we ask random and unsuspecting people that same question that we put on Twitter. So this week's question is, would you use an alternative to narcotics if you were in pain? So we'll try to get to some questions tonight. And I would like to go ahead and talk to Dr. Kearns. Jim, let me just start by asking, you're a naturopath. Can you say what naturopathy is? I know that's probably a...
Before we do that, can you say that fast 10 times?
Probably not. You want me to try? It's, you know.
So naturopathy is a form of manual medicine. It's similar to chiropractic or osteopathic. They actually all started within 10 years of each other. And the idea is to work with the body. I call it putting people back together again. Mm-hmm. So it works with the muscles and the bones together. Since the muscles tell the bones where to go, basically what naturopaths do is they stretch out the muscles and they put the bone back in place.
And in the interest of self-disclosure, I will say that I was a patient of yours for a long time, and you put me back together. So I can testify. I can testify. It's not that great tonight. Maybe I'll have you work on me a little bit. But
we'll hang you upside down.
Hang you upside down.
Figure out whatever it takes.
Do whatever. So what kind of people... What kind of pain walks in the door in your office?
Well, pain's a great motivator. Pain is what brings people in.
Got me
and,
there.
Absolutely. And what I found, in addition to doing any kind of manual manipulation, what I found with people who are in pain is what empowers them is to also, once I put them back together again, I try to give people some self-help tools, because on Sunday afternoon I don't have office hours. But guess when people throw off their backs?
Yeah, probably.
Pick company picnics, you know, when they're with
raking
family.
Raking the leaves.
Raking leaves, all those times. So I like to give people some physical therapy exercises in addition to that, because it gives people some control, because pain makes people feel out of control, right? So if they've got some things that they can do so that they participate in the healing process, it doesn't rely just on me. And I found that people who use those tools are able to manage their pain and work with their pain more effectively.
Okay, so, you know, and for the purposes of our show tonight, one of the things that, you know, I mean, we're about addictions, and one of our big, you know, concerns, or one of the concerns that's out there right now in the general population is prescription narcotic abuse, you know. And in fact, I saw a special, I was talking to Mitchell here this morning about hearing an ad in the on the news radio program about a narcotic pain medication treatment program, right? You know, like in the middle of the morning on a Sunday. So, you know, so it's like it's out there.
Absolutely. And I can tell when I've got a new patient who's on any kind of narcotic. First of all, I can see it in their eyes, and I can see it in their mannerisms.
What do you see?
You see glazed look in their eyes. They're talking really fast or really slow, either one, and they're focused on their pain exclusively. So when I'm doing an exam with somebody, I'll say
to the exclusion of the what causes it, or
to the exclusion of what alleviates the pain. They're so micro focused on what the pain is and how it overwhelms their life. So typically, what they'll tell me in a case history in a first visit is, I started on 2 Norcos, you know, then after 6 months that didn't do the trick, so I boosted up. And I've had patients look me square in the face saying, I'm taking 8 or 10 of those a day. And they have no concept of what that's doing to the rest of reality. Because okay. They're so focused on that pain.
I get you. And if Mr. Drughead was here tonight, I'd say, so tell the crowd what a Norco is. But my understanding of what a Norco is basically a double Vicodin. And what
exactly.
A Vicodin is a narcotic painkiller.
Absolutely. And what it does is, it, from my perspective, is it disassociates people not only with the pain, but with their body. So my role as a doctor, as crazy as it might sound, is to bring people back into their body. See, people drag this body around with them, and then when it breaks down, they get mad. You know, but they don't do anything. You know, people understand you got to water flowers, you got to put gas in your car, but they drag this body around with them, and they don't take care of it. So they use medication, they use narcotics, and so that numbs them to making that connection. So that's why when I see a patient who's got that glazed look in their eyes, so my role, even in an initial exam, is to start to connect them. So what I found is anybody who's on narcotics, if I say, well, does that make it hurt? Everything makes it hurt.
Mm.
So then I have to say, well, what makes it better? That connection, if I say, so if someone's got right shoulder pain and I raise their arm, they're like, oh, that hurts. And I could raise their arm 5 degrees just away from their body. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. So if there's no torn, if there's nothing physical there, it's like, well, I say, well, what make it better? What makes it better? They can't answer that.
Right.
They can't.
There's probably
feel it.
One thing that makes it better.
That's exactly right.
Is that upstairs largely?
Totally, totally upstairs.
Yeah. So how do you separate somebody from that notion?
It's a process. It's a process because that's where the empowerment comes in, that they don't exclusively rely on medication, that they themselves can have control over it. And there's some simple positions they can put their body in which will lower pain. So we start talking about things like, well, what's the difference between a level 10 pain and a level 5 pain? And people who've had surgeries, multiple surgeries, they get that. They can distinguish that.
Well, and I think, and I'm sure, you know, maybe you could talk about this a little bit, but people want, you know, when somebody's hurting, that all they want is to not hurt. Like, I came here to not hurt, and you're giving me exercises and telling me it's going to hurt a little more, or, you know, it's more like a fast food. You know, Norco is like fast food.
Absolutely.
It's not nutritious, but it does the job.
Yeah. And so when I was saying it's a process, you don't jump people in exercises.
Yeah.
So there's a process where what I was saying earlier is like I'll put the body back together. It's a beauty of manual manipulation. You know, if someone's in a chronic pain pattern where their body is out of alignment, the beauty of, you know, stretching is that you can take a muscle that's too tight, you can lengthen it, you can put a bone back in place. And people, no matter what kind of medication they're on, they can feel physically the difference in their body. So, I'll introduce them to that concept.
So you do it slow enough so they can, do you like ask them as you go along with
absolutely
small movements?
Particularly with someone on medication, the role is anything that we do in this visit should not hurt.
Huh.
So if that happens, you tell me. But then I want to take it a step further and say, tell me if something feels better. And inevitably, anybody that's on narcotics, they can't answer that question. They can't tell me. They can tell me what hurts, and everything hurts. But I'm like, now, wait a minute. I know clinically in my mind, I'm like, there's some things that we're doing here where we're restoring range of motion, taking muscles that are chronically shortened position.
So their mind is still telling them that it hurts, even though you've noticed as a physician that they've got a bigger range of motion.
Because that's that cyclical thinking of.
And so does it, like, catch up? Like, does that slowly catch up that they're getting better?
Slowly it does. And sometimes if they can't feel it, that's the beauty of measuring range of motion. So someone who's got a chronic low back problem, they've had two surgeries, typically those are people who can't bend forward. They'll say, I can't tie my shoes. So they'll barely be able to bend forward. So I'll do some of that stretching. If they can't feel a difference, I'm like, all right, stand up. We'll compare their range of motion before I did it. And they're like, oh. So if they can't feel it, then they can see it. But they've got to be a witness to noticing that change. I'm in the business of change.
Is that just people that are taking, pain medication, or is that does it generalize?
It's universal. I would say, the concept that we can change alignment is something that's lost on people. If I would have a wish, it would be to help people understand that, if someone is a truck driver, their posture is radically different than someone who stands for a living, because they're putting their body in a position where they're sitting 8 to 10 hours a day versus someone who's maybe a patrol officer or walking the streets or something like that. The way their hips are positioned, the way their back is positioned, will be radically different because they're asking their muscles to do two totally different tasks.
So let's go back to, like, if you're talking to if a recovery person walks in your door, there, it's we start with the assumption it's probably not a good idea for them to be using narcotics. There may be reasons where some circumstances where they'll have to, but for the most part, narcotics and recovery from alcoholism and drug addiction don't go well together.
And I just had a patient, and he was deathly afraid, because he was in recovery, and then he had to use some narcotics after surgery, and he lost his sobriety. He was deathly afraid because he was looking at another surgery, and deathly afraid because he was talking to his surgeon, and the surgeon was very free to give these medications out. So he was saying, should I do?
Would you say, do you think that's a common thing?
For surgeons, yeah. They want to make sure when they're done cutting that there's a minimal amount of pain. From a medical perspective, for that 4 to 6 weeks post-operative.
This is liable to be a leading question or a little bit touchy, but do you think for the most part doctors understand addiction?
No. Surgeons are great at what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Good technicians.
That's exactly right. I consider them like the mechanics of the body, so that's what they're great at. And I think most surgeons would agree that that's their scope of practice. That's what they're great at. But beyond that, good physicians defer to other people who have a better handle on that.
Well, unfortunately, the physicians are the ones that write the scripts.
This is true.
So we're going to go a little off the script right now, off the reservation, and ask you, why do you think, you seem to be pretty tuned into the addictions situation. Of course, you're a natural a provider of natural alternatives. But why is it that doctors, even though they're technically skilled, and why is it that they've been to school all these years and for the most part don't seem to have a real good handle on the addiction thing?
Hmm.
I mean, and maybe that's not a fair question. I don't know. I'm asking for conjecture, but I just wonder.
Well, what I've noticed in the medical field is in medicine people, that's their specialty. Like, that's what they focus on. So if you ask them to go beyond that, they'll say you've got to see your rheumatologist, you know, which is an arthritis doctor. You know, so it's very compartmentalized. Medicine has become so specialized. I sometimes joke with my patients that if your right index finger is broken, but you're seeing the specialist who works with thumbs, he's like, sorry, you have to go down the hall.
You got to go to the thumbologist. To see that. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, we've become.
I don't do thumbs.
No. Right, exactly. No. And it literally has become so specialized that there's.
You need a gong there. Yeah, I got a gong. I think we got a guy to have a gong.
That sounds. You know what I'm saying? You see that even in cancer treatments now, that there's not a universal treatment for cancer. They specialize so much. Medicine's become so specialized. So I think addictions.
But everybody gives. But all. Every specialty gives, you know, can write a prescription.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
I mean, therein lies the rub, I guess, huh?
Right, and I think from a medical perspective, what they're focusing on, they know when they, let's say for a surgeon, for example, they know when they cut that the body's response to any kind of surgical procedure is going to be pain. And most surgeons want to minimize that. And 4 to 6 weeks is typical postoperative healing process. So they want to minimize that amount of pain during the course of that, and so that people can start transitioning into physical therapy or something like that. And so that would be my understanding of why they defer to pain meds. The problem is, well, what happens if that healing hasn't occurred within that 6 weeks? Now that's where the medical system doesn't know how to work with them.
Yeah, now we got a big question mark. The other question mark is there's lots of people that aren't post-surge. I mean, there's a lot of people that have problems, didn't have surgery.
Exactly.
Who end up on pain meds for one reason or another. Maybe some kind of maintenance or...
Or failed surgeries, you know, surgeries that don't work so well.
Sure.
Or people that have had multiple surgeries, you know.
Are these the kind of people that you're seeing?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Is that why you're better tuned here or what?
Yeah, and I would say, and that's why, because those are the patients that are walking my door, if I was doing the same thing that everybody else had done, they, you know, then I would be doing them a disservice. You know, they wouldn't be walking to my door. If that would have worked, they wouldn't need to be coming to see me, right?
That's right.
So
they're looking for something.
Exactly. They're looking for something. And so that's why that body-mind connection is so crucial and so critical.
So most of the people that come to see you have already tried traditional medicine?
I would say that's true. Yeah, I would say they've tried traditional medicine and they're looking for something more.
And just How many people would you say, just a ballpark percentage, that walk in your door already on, you know, narcotics? But how many do you think have addictions problems? Not necessarily. I'm talking about recovery. I'm just talking about whether they know it or not. What you think?
Oh, easily 3/4, 75% of the people I see, easily.
Okay. Well, then that answers my question about why.
Absolutely.
Why you know.
And even just dependence, you know, where it's easily and some of the people that are dependent, and that's where the mind mm-hmm. enters into it, you may not hear, they may not even put on the initial intake form, but if they're on their third surgery, they've come to mentally rely on, I got to take a Norco every now and then because it helps me sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, wait a minute, that's not what that's for.
No.
Last time I checked.
No, originally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Norco's not for sleep.
You know, one of the best examples I can give you is I just had a new patient on Friday. She's had surgery. She's had, you know, 2 years of physical therapy, and she's still in pain. So right away, I have to be honest with her and say, you know, I gave her my spiel. Her job requires to sit 8 to 10 hours a day, and she told me in the beginning, my computer is not set up right. The chair that I have is from the 70s. It's taped together with duct tape. So her body position has molded into that chair.
Right.
So the fact that when she gets out of that chair after 10 hours, her spine doesn't go back to normal. And so after she had worked within, I guess I would call it traditional medicine, probably 3 years. Nobody had told her that if you download 8 to 10 hours of asking your muscles to do that, your spine doesn't rebound, and that's why you can do all the surgeries, all the physical therapy, but you've got to treat the rest of your life, the other 23 and a half hours a day,
right.
And notice what you're doing to your body there.
Was she
big
into...
She was using medication to manage that as well.
Right. And it wasn't, you know, wasn't working, which is why.
Which is why she saw me.
Now you said, you know, you said 75% of the people, and just, I know it's a ballpark, you're not counting,
yeah.
And you know, but that's a big number.
Huge.
Yeah, that's a
huge.
Big number of people who end up becoming medication dependent.
Most definitely.
I don't know that this is within your frame of reference to answer either, but I'll ask it anyway. It's, what do you think happens to those people who are medication dependent and maybe learn to manage their pain through you? What happens to their medication dependence? I mean, what happens to the mental part of their medication?
So you mean if I'm working with them, you mean?
Yeah.
So that's if I can't help them make that connection that they're in control,
mm-hmm.
there's no way they're going to not rely on that medication, because they've been taught pain equals being out of control equals taking another hydrocodone.
Right. What's the most common thing you see people taking?
Hydrocodone.
Hydrocodone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Easily. Vicodin's evil and dark, and people have
right.
pretty severe reactions to that by and large.
I have heard that.
Whereas hydrocodone's a little smoother, easier
yeah.
to tolerate.
Yeah.
But so, as a result, easier to take more of over a period of time.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is maybe stop there for a minute, and can we do peeps on the street at this point?
You're darn.
Because there's a couple of darn tootin'.
All right. We've got a couple of random peeps on the street interviews concerning the question of the day here. So give a listen.
All right, you're on. Question is,
I'm on.
You're on. You are. The question is, if you had physical pain, would you take an alternative for it rather than like narcotics or?
My whole thing is I've stayed away from narcotics. I've done ibuprofen, naproxen, sodium stuff. I don't react well to the, and actually the narcotics don't help me very much.
Why
so,
is that?
I don't know. I don't think Vicodin affects me the way it does other people. It's like too weak or something. And I've been afraid to try anything else. I did Norco or
rock and roll.
Something messed me up the last time I had a medical procedure where I think I had a dental thing. No, it messed me up. Yeah, no, it sent me loopy rather than. I mean, I might have taken the pain away, but I freaked out because I hadn't felt like that in 20 years.
Okay.
So yeah, it was. That was the last time I took anything. I don't take anything narcotic anymore.
Yeah, I'd absolutely use an alternative. I mean, given our current political and societal climate with the way that prescription drugs are used and misused, I think finding alternatives are definitely necessary at this point in order for us to get away from the negatives of the prescription world.
What would you say is the downside of the script form?
Abuse, addiction. I mean, I've read articles lately about people, you know, moving over from the Oxycontin and anything else that they're using to just straight heroin because that's right. what's working for them now.
Right.
So I hate to see people going for a legitimate need of pain relief and then having it destroy their lives. So
you want to respond to any of that?
So non-steroidals is a whole different class than narcotics, obviously.
Say what that is.
So those are the over-the-counters.
Right.
Ibuprofen, naproxen, and those are much more available to people. And I would say that's even abused more than narcotics because it's more available to people. They don't need a prescription for it.
Mm-hmm.
And people aren't aware of how that compromises their entire system till maybe they get a stomach bleed or they develop an ulcer or they get gastric reflux. So all those symptoms are from years for people who will be taking those kind of medications, the non-steroidal, the ibuprofens, and people don't have a sense of how that affects their overall health.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the same kind of McDonald's mentality that you're using. Oh, I got an ache and pain, I mow the lawn, I'll take 2 ibuprofen. Wait a minute, if you actually read the fine line in the reading on it, it says take 1, wait 2 hours, and if you're still bad, take a second. But
it says that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I feel like just a lack of education. I think most people think that, oh, I know how to use aspirin, you know?
Well, it's the concept, well, if one works, two works twice as good. But when right. really the dosage, so typical ibuprofen is 220, between 200 and 220 milligrams. So, you know, they think, yeah, well, just up to 400, you know, in that 400 range, and then I'll be able to mow the lawn twice as long.
The tractor.
Right.
In our second, what's that? We've got it sounds like a Long Ranger kind of sound going on.
Transmissions.
The second Pete talked about how people moved through, you know, from legitimate use of pain medication into other things, maybe not legal. You know,
well,
heroin,
and there's no doubt.
Have you come across that? Or
absolutely. And I, you know, especially with people who've got physical jobs, construction workers, concrete, where it's physical backbreaking work.
Right.
You know, so the idea is, or, you know, these guys have to go out and work. So this is the time of year, summer, where guys are working 8, 10, 12-hour shifts. And if they've got to pay bills, it's not like, even though they're in pain, they still got to wake up the next day and do it.
So they're getting through the day somehow.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, I think we're gonna stop there, and we're going to ask Athena and Lamont to come and play us a song. Will you play us a song?
Yes, a song.
Play us a song.
Hola.
Hola.
As you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the bus drivers, the truck drivers that have to sit for hours or office jobs, and we're singing a song about sitting on the dock of the bay. Trying to figure out,
well,
you know, what that
is. My back. Taking back.
Aspirin
lady. A PC version, moving on the dock of the
move
stretching
the
on the target.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Watching the sky roll away. Oh, oh.
guys. And you'll come back and play us out in a few minutes, huh? And I should mention, these guys just spent the day in a recording studio. I don't know what all they were doing there, but we're going to hear a little bit more about it in a few minutes. So, anyway, so back to our discussion. I guess where I kind of want to go with this, with the second half of what we're doing here, is maybe sort of a solution-oriented discussion about, you know, what would we expect if somebody came in, you know, a recovering person came in, maybe even a newly recovering person who wasn't really very aware of the dangerousness of narcotics, comes into you with a problem, not necessarily a post-surgical problem, but a pain problem. What are you tell them? What do you do?
I tell them talk to their sponsor. First and foremost, and if it's a situation, I had someone who had lost their sobriety because they went on narcotics because of a surgery, and she knew she was coming up to another surgery. She was deathly afraid of getting on medication again, but her pain was at a 10 out of 10 and starting to cause her life to spiral out of control. So the first thing I said is, when you get the next prescription of narcotics, give it to your sponsor.
Yeah.
And make sure that every pill that you get is from your sponsor, and you follow that prescription exactly. And once that prescription's done, you're done. And I just saw her Friday, and she's done with her surgery. She doesn't need, so she went through that 4 to 6 weeks, and so she doesn't need the medication anymore. It gets trickier for people who have to manage that long term. It gets much trickier.
How much of that 10 was the narcotic nervousness about having any pain, and how much of it was a
10? That's where clinically you just have to give it some time. And so what I was saying to you earlier, I don't, that makes sense when I said to get someone into their body.
Yeah.
So when,
maybe
when,
say more about
yeah,
that. What
when,
does that mean?
That's how you go down that road, and that's where you find out, is that the medication talking, is that their head talking, or is that their body talking?
That's when you do. Then you work in the movements.
Exactly.
Where you get range of motion.
So my experience has been the body has its own wisdom. The body will eventually, the body's ability to heal itself is phenomenal. And most of the 75% of people that I see that are on pain medication, they don't want to be on that medication.
Right.
But I make a clear distinction using those pain levels. There's a huge difference between, say, a level 4 out of 10. You can live with that. It's not great. You can manage it. Once you start getting up in 6s and 7s, you want that prescription bottle a little bit closer, because now you're starting to gnaw on your teeth. You know the old cowboy movies where they put the wood right between your teeth?
And little tears in the corners of your eyes kind of thing?
Right. That's the 7 out of 10.
And that's not going to work for a guy who's,
you know. You can't be digging ditches or driving trucks 7 out of 10 pain. You know, there's just no way you can be putting in those long days, which is how they, end up that way. So you take people down that journey of self-discovery, and you find out, is this your medication telling you you're a 10 out of 10 pain? Well, you know, so what if you're on 8 of those and you start on a program with me? After a month, are you able to get down to 6? All right. Then we're 2 months in the program. Can you get down to 4? But it's not just enough to have them slowly start lowering their medication. That's where giving them 2 or 3 positions to put their body, and not even exercises. Exercise sometimes in my world with someone who's in pain, that's a dirty word. Because
exercise
their bodies,
is too much.
Well, their bodies betrayed them.
Yeah.
So much. So you tell them exercise, they're like, dude, every time I move, I'm in pain. Now you're asking me to move more.
So when you say position, you find a position where they can get in where
pain
they're
relief.
Not in pain relief positions.
And so
give me an example of that. I mean, I know you can't, like, we're not on TV, so you really can't show us.
Well, Rick is hanging upside down right now. That's what people in the listening audience don't
know. Right, you don't know.
Right.
Yeah, right. You know, I mean,
he's in traction right now.
Right.
Something real simple. If people can visualize this, if you've got a couch or a coffee table at home, lay flat on your back and throw your legs up on that couch and coffee table. Snug your butt up as close to that couch or coffee table as you can, so that your knees are bent a 90-degree angle, and so is your back. It's a mild form of traction. It shuts off the back muscles, and it provides some relief for back stiffness, pain, and it's safe for everybody. Share that with your friends and family. It's something that people, especially chronic pain people,
easy to do.
Easy to do. Yep. The most the feedback I get from people, the hardest thing is getting into the position and sometimes getting out.
Right. Because if you're in a lot of pain, it would be hard to get down there in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had an 82-year-old patient, George, 50-year history of back pain, over 6 surgeries, and I shared that with him on a Monday. So Tuesday, he calls me at my office. He said, the first time in 30 years, he said, I had a half hour of pain relief. I said, George, I only told you to lay there 10 minutes. He said, you think I was going to get out of there after 10 minutes?
It feels so good.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's as simple as that.
Absolutely. And so that's why, even to introduce that concept of exercise, instead if I say, what if I gave you a position where your level 10 pain could come down to a 6? Now you've got people's attention. And then that possibility of not relying on their pain relievers becomes a reality. But you have to go down that journey of self-discovery.
You have to do it first. You got any other examples of some simple things that you've given to people that help them relatively quickly?
For truck drivers, I educate them on what the proper sitting position is. So the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons came up with a definition of what posture should be. Mm-hmm. And I show them people what the spine should look like. And then I have them visually look at that, and then I say, well, where do you think you? So let's be more specific. We'll say, where do you think your hips are compared to that chart?
Mm.
And for every truck driver, if you think of the sitting position, you sit back on your sit bones. So the correct definition of posture sitting should be that you're upright. I call it sitting as tall as you can.
Okay.
So if you
so like not like me.
Exactly, right. But that's what chairs do, right?
It
so,
is.
One way that people can do a self-test for you out in the listening audience is try to sit up as tall as you can and hold that for a minute.
Hmm.
Now, your body is going to give you feedback. Your muscles are going to tell you how well they work. If after 20 seconds your muscles are screaming at you, guess what? You know that your posture is compromised, because that's not crazy, right? When we're talking about exercise, I'm not saying run around the block. I'm just saying
sit up.
Sit upright.
Right.
Right? So that's an example of if truck drivers can't do that, then they've got some idea of how those muscles do or sometimes don't work. And most people that see me, their muscles don't work and haven't worked for a long period of time.
And so your job is to get them to work again.
Exactly. So you know those, have you ever seen those back supports, you know,
yeah,
that go like
yeah.
in the low back?
Yeah, yeah.
Those are tools to start to introduce that curve into the low back.
Right.
But those are only reminders to help the muscles slowly start to turn on. Because if people become dependent on those, now you're not turning those muscles on. So it's only partially effective. But that would be a good one. So like for listening audience members, think of sitting up as tall as you can. A good test to do that is try to do that for a minute and see how well your body can do that. Another fun one that I like to have people do is stand up against the wall with your heels against the wall. And use the wall as a feedback. For people whose hip is out of position, if you feel a huge sway back in your low back, so if you're standing up against a wall right now and you can put your hand
behind your low back. And you know
everybody
here is thinking, I'm going to do that as soon as I can get next to a wall. I'm going to check this out.
Absolutely. It's a good self-test.
Yeah.
So your question was a really good one, you know. So if you can slide your hand behind your low back, and there you could fit like a car between there,
mm-hmm.
then there's a misalignment in, not only in the low back but the hip as well. And what I want your listening audience to know is a lot of these things are easy to fix once you know what muscles to turn on or what muscles to turn off. And if that connection, where people who are taking a lot of narcotics or are addicted, it gives them that vital tool where they start to take control back of their body, because they're coming from a perspective of their bodies betray them, they're out of control, that's why they're on the medication.
So in reality, in this case here, what we're talking about is the narcotics are actually counterproductive to healing.
It's disassociating from everything I just said.
You couldn't feel that, but you would know which muscles to turn
you're
on. You wouldn't even
know. You're taking eight Norco a day. You don't know if you're sitting up. That feedback mechanism.
Yeah, you don't know
body.
If you're sitting up yeah. or laying down. Basically. Exactly right. Exactly.
And you don't care.
Yeah, right. It wouldn't really matter that much.
So you got a guy who's asking right. you to do this, and you're like, dude, just give me another pill. I mean, what are you talking about? You know. So right. what I do is not for everybody. There's no doubt
yeah.
about that. It's for people who want to make that connection, and that they have to start to trust their body, though.
Well,
you're absolutely
in the
right.
recovering community, in many respects, has to.
Absolutely.
I mean, otherwise, you're asking for trouble. So
which
I mean,
is why they are great candidates, because they are they want that. You know,
right.
They're great candidates.
I mean, everybody will say they don't want to take a pill, but there's only a certain category of people that really don't want to take a pill.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many guys I've talked to that says, I don't even take an aspirin, you know, but I drink a quart of, vodka a day, but I don't even take an aspirin, you know. I mean, so I'm not going with the I want to take pills thing. It's, let's see what happens. Here,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good. It's a great alternative for recovering people to be able to hear this and see this, you know, because
mm-hmm.
now have you had, I know you told me a story one time about a guy who was on methadone for pain. This was quite a few years ago.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how somebody would get all the way to methadone for pain.
Because that's
used for detox from heroin or maintenance from heroin.
And actually, it started out with a low back injury.
Okay.
He was one of those construction workers that I was talking about. It was this time of year, it was summer. And it was the classic case of a back injury, started out with something over the counter, didn't work, got to go to work the next day, goes back to the doc, I'll take these, start out with hydrocodone. It was that cycle.
Hydrocodone doesn't work, we go to
absolutely.
We go to Norco. Norco doesn't work, we go to what?
You go to six Norco a day, those didn't work. So that's,
and now we need detox from Norco
absolutely.
And pain relief, so we're
yeah.
taking, so we're now.
And that's the person who's in my office where their eyes are all squirrely and they don't
right.
know what day of the week it is, but they are working 12 hours a day.
Right, right. And that to me is the story of the the addiction problem that that we see. Like our peep said on the street, how people can go from the narcotic pain medication to use it on the street. Actually, I've heard this, and again, I would ask Mr. Drughead to verify it for me, but I've heard that an Oxycontin or an oxycodone on the street is about $1 a milligram, and they come in 40s and 80s. So imagine if you had an Oxycontin habit or an oxycodone habit at $80 a pill, how would you come up with that kind of money? Where heroin's, $100 a jab, $10 a bag,
Absolutely. And so the individual you're talking about, that's how that cycle started.
Yeah.
And so that disassociation, you're going to get more of a kick from the heroin than you will oxycodone, because you'll develop a tolerance for all that.
Sure.
It's amazing, what the function that people can do while they're on all that stuff, and the pain that they have. And so they sometimes when they're on that much medication, they know they're in pain, but they're out of control. They don't know what to do about it other than pop another pill.
Yeah, so what you're saying is sometimes people are on the narcotics or even on the narcotics, even still in pain.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't know how much pain they're in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the disassociation.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, I think this is really a great resource for people. Are there other, what avenues would could people take to do, non-drug oriented treatments for structural or muscle issues? I mean, obviously nephropathy is one road to go down. Are there other roads that they could take?
Yeah. So in 1978, the World Health Organization recognized acupuncture as a legitimate treatment for pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
And the World Health Organization has been around a long time, longer than the AMA.
Yeah.
And so I direct some of my patients that I'm working with, if they're if they need something more for pain relief so that they can begin a program with me, I'll refer them to some acupuncturists as well.
Any other things that you've used, or I know you work with an orthopedic guy as well. So we're not crossing off.
Nope. I work within the medical community, so there's a time and a place for that. I'm fortunate enough to be associated with surgeons who are good. You know, I'm in the unfortunate position. I see some of the failed surgeries,
mm-hmm.
and that people get in the cycle. So I do refer to orthopedics that I know will get in, do what they need to do, get out, and then get people on the recovery, you know, and healing as quick as possible. But there's other forms of natural medications. That will help. There's a microcurrent therapy that I use, which is a form of electroacupuncture that's been proven clinically to reduce pain levels as well. TENS units are great. If you see some of the football players.
What is that?
If you see some of the athletes after when they're doing a conference, press conference, like after a football game or a pitcher, they got the big bag of ice on their shoulder, mm-hmm. and they got the black little thing on their belt. That's a muscle stim or a TENS unit that a pitcher's got on their shoulder. So it takes down inflammation and it reduces pain levels. And that's another thing that I encourage particularly all of my patients, not just patients in recovery, that it's something that they can use aside from medications because it's external. You just put pads on the muscles and the joints that are affected, and it'll give people pain relief that way.
And I heard you mention ice. Is ice
absolutely
something that...
Ice is a great form of reducing inflammation and helping with pain as well.
And does these are all things that seem pretty simple. I mean,
absolutely.
Not really complex.
So one of the things I like to say to my patients is movement is medicine at the right time in the healing process. You know, it's medicine for the body, but it's also medicine for the mind. Something as simple as a walk. You and I were talking about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
For someone with low back pain, who's locked in that cycle of not moving, the fact of just going for a 10-minute walk. We're not talking crazy, you know, in terms of time or distance, but just that ability to move. Because if you don't use the body, if you don't move it, you will lose it.
You said something a little earlier that interests me. You said, you know, this isn't going to be for everybody. In other words, some people are just going to, they're going to want the quick fix. Just no. If sands or bucks.
Absolutely.
Give me a pill.
Right.
Gotta go. So, I mean, in a way, I think that really fits well with the recovery model because it's the same thinking. This isn't for everybody. You know, it's for people who want it.
Right.
Heard that phrase?
Absolutely.
I don't know, there's probably a few people here that might have heard that phrase, but yeah, so it's, you know, it's for people who want it. You know, not necessarily just for people who need it. And that's, you know, that's why it fits so well. You know, so again, back to the, you know, back for a minute to the doctor, to, you know, it's still a dilemma for me why, you know, you seem to get it. I guess maybe because you work with more people that need to do non-medical intervention.
Right.
You know.
And I put them on I put patients on a program. So I've got a patient, Tony, who had seen his chiropractor for 25 years every other week. And he was one of those people when he stood up against the wall, his back had this huge curve. So I showed him three sets of – he did three exercises on Monday. After I did a lot of the physical work in the office, I just set him up on a program on Monday, a different program on Tuesday, and a different program on Wednesday. So I saw him for 6 weeks in order to get him started on that program. And we had, if you remember last winter, where we had three snowstorms in a row, three
mm-hmm.
days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't seen Tony in 5 years, but it was the third snowstorm in 3 days where he couldn't work himself out of it. So I saw him. He said he was fine for 5 years. He was doing the stuff I showed him, totally pain-free. Didn't need any medical intervention, no medication, but it was that third snowstorm that put him over the edge. Mm-hmm. I just had to do a little work with him. And I said, Tony's 72 now. I said, I'll see him in 5 years. So that's the kind of stuff when we're talking about putting people on programs.
Right.
So we like to do it. Exactly.
You know what? The point you made a little bit ago just makes me think, you know, it's not for everyone. Do you have clients that come to you and you would kind of explain what you're planning on doing and they say, you know what, you know, you're crazy, you know, yeah, this isn't for me, and just kind of, you know, either fight you on it or walk.
I've had patients with low back pain and some disc injuries, herniated disc, which we manage a lot, who I've explained this principle of alignment and that we work with the muscles and the bones and we can put you back together again, and look at their MRI, which is minimal, things we've worked with all the time. I'll say that to them. They'll look me straight in the face and they'll say, I want surgery. I feel that that's what's going to help me. And so my job as a physician is to send them to the surgeon, because you can tell those people that have made it up in their minds that that's what's going to heal them.
Right.
You're not going to convince somebody.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
You know, yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think there's some parallels, you know, to people who understand what working, you know, what a program is and the need to work that.
Yep.
You know, and that go well with the recovery.
And that's why I call it a program, because people are in recovery. That in the same way what we're doing here, there is no quick fix.
Sure.
Your body took a long time to get that much out of alignment to the point where you need to be on narcotics.
Yeah. Fewer steps, but effective.
Exactly.
That's pretty good. Say a little bit, just you know, by way of you know, tooting your own horn. What you have a way to get to you on the internet? Do you have
absolutely. My website is painfree101.com. That's the numbers 101.
Okay.
And
painfree101.com.
We choose that because there's an educational component. There's articles on my website to educate people, so that they can learn a little bit more. And so we've got a website there that we direct people to, and we're on Facebook as well.
All right.
Northwest Healthcare Center is my office. And the phone number for people who are interested is area code 815-337-7109.
Perfect.
You can also find that information as well on Twitter at Rickwater, and Rick's Facebook page as well. There's links to that website.
Oh, nice work. Did you do that?
I just now.
I'm impressed. The engineering is just really going off the charts here.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, Jim, I really appreciate you coming tonight. It was a great show and helpful and informative. And we're going to ask Lamont and Athena to come back. Or actually, we're going to ask Lamont to come back. Athena will stay here, but Lamont will play the guitar and sing. And he'll play us on out, and that'll be it for tonight. And should I exit now, or should we wait on that?
Why don't you exit now?
Okay.
Play off.
All right, then we'll just play off. So, I thank Jim, and I appreciate you coming. And I'll email out the link for next week's show as soon as I have it, which is usually Wednesday or Thursday. And remember to live today, love yourself, and love your neighbor. And together we'll trudge the happy road to destiny. We hope you enjoyed the show. Give us your feedback and ideas. See you next Sunday at 8 o'clock.
I think most of us need a hug and a kick in the pants, and that's basically what this song is trying to do. Cheer up, you are worse off than you figure. Your heart is beating to mine.
Your way. And oh.